Good morning, diners and travelers. You're listening to On the Menu with Ann and Peter Haig. And today's program is a savory one with a little bit of sweet and some really good long family stories involved.
You bet. They're all family stories.
And we're starting off with Udell Watts IV.
This is the ultimate family story.
Yeah, it is. And he's holding Udell Watts V in his lap as we're doing the interview.
Arthur Watts escaped from slavery. That's how far back this family goes. So it's quite a fascinating story. And you'll also find out why all the men in the family are called Udell.
Yes. We're talking to Udell Watts IV. Now, that means there are three before you, Udell. Three Udells. Three Udell Watts before you.
Absolutely. And sitting to my right now is Udell Watts V, my teenage son.
There's going to be another generation.
Oh, that's wonderful.
That's great. And this, now, you make Old Arthur's barbecue sauce and variations of that, dry rubs and whatnot. Is this your first trip now to the specialty food, summer fancy food show?
This is our first trip, and we're excited to be going.
Have you ever been?
We've never been to the fancy food show before. We've wanted to go. We just weren't able to put it together, and this year we're finally in a position to do it.
Well, just you wait. It's a trip, I'll tell you.
and there's somebody you should look up when you're there. Because their story is almost like yours.
Yeah.
The product is called Stubbs barbecue sauce.
Do you know Stubbs?
Oh, yeah.
Yep. Well, they usually show up. His grandson's usually there.
Yeah. They're definitely a much more mature brand than ours, but we're very familiar with them, and I do look forward to seeing them as well as just about anybody else that has a barbecue-related product. I realize that we have a lot to learn.
Well, you know what? You have a lot to see at this show
Hold on a minute. Before we leave Stubbs behind, you did one thing more important than what Stubbs did, because you still own the brand.
Oh, absolutely.
And Stubbs got taken over and became a big-time corporation.
Right. Well, you know, there's something to be said about going either direction. For us, we are fiercely proud of what is my great-great-grandfather, Arthur, and his legacy. It's not just his sauces and seasonings that he created, but it's the history behind him that, you know, we could never part with. Not saying that at some point in the future we'd never have a partnership, but never would we walk away from our family.
Well, tell us the story. Where did it start? What's the beginning? And how did we get Old Arthur's?
Absolutely. So Arthur was born a slave.
Really?
From the age of maybe 5 or 6, his job was making sure that the cooking fires on the big production farm that owned him, that the cooking fires never went out. And by the time he was in his teens, he was responsible for a good deal of the cooking, which included open-pit barbecue. You know, it was at that time that he began dabbling with, you know, just herbs and any basic spices that he might have had available to him to complement the foods that he was cooking. So when you fast forward to the age of 28, Arthur was actually freed through the Emancipation Proclamation. You know, he had been a slave in Randolph County, Missouri, which is essentially Kansas City, Missouri. And, when he was freed, the only thing of value that he had to take with him out of bondage were his recipes and his skills. So he left central Missouri, wound up eventually in central Illinois, and quickly found that he was able to leverage his recipes and leverage his skill to earn his living literally for the remainder of his life. And the man lived to be 108 years of age.
See, that I found almost unimaginable. 108. By today's standards, it's long.
But the amazing thing was he created a business. I mean, that, that, that must have been very rare. I mean, this was a time of transition in the United States, but it wasn't a transition that turned out to be doing all that well.
You're absolutely correct. And so, in that business itself, he found himself in great demand in Central Illinois, to the point in which communities and organizations would send for him in the little town that he lived in. He lived in Kewanee, Illinois, and, you know, towns for 100 miles around, if they were conducting a city festival or a big event that included a some sort of barbecue, they literally would pay his way and put him up with, you know, his one request being, I'll come and I'll conduct your barbecue. I'll supervise the pits. I'll prepare the meats, and I will prepare the sauces and seasonings that will go on the meats, but you have to provide the proper manpower to build a proper pit. And, you know, if you visit our website, you'll see what he meant by a proper pit. We've got photos in our photo gallery of a couple of pits that he and his sons were responsible for. And the dimensions essentially were 40 feet long.
Oh, wow.
six feet wide and 4 feet deep. And they would throw oak timber in the bottom of the pit during the day. They would light it so that at nighttime it would be embers. They would throw rebar or piping over the top and then cattle wire over it. And then at about midnight, they would throw pork shoulders on top of it and station men at about 5 or 6 foot intervals to turn those pork shoulders through the night with pitchforks.
Yeah.
Essentially the food would be ready. The pork shoulders would be ready to go at about 10 o'clock, 11 o'clock the next morning. They'd be ready to slice.
Now, what a story, huh?
Now, where does the name Udo come from?
I mean,
that's kind of unusual. I mean, old Arthur's son, you might think be Arthur the Second.
Well, there was an Arthur the Second, but that was Arthur's second born.
Okay.
So that's a really interesting question. Not many people know, but, you know, imagine, Stan, that Arthur, again, was a slave in central Kansas. And if you can visualize the state of, Kansas City, Missouri, rather, if you can visualize the state of Missouri, to the right is the state of Illinois, and directly to the north of it is the state of Iowa. So as a slave, you know, with no hope of being freed in your mind, you're thinking about, if I ever get a chance to run, if I ever get a chance to get away from here, I know to go due north. Well, if you look at that map, due north from Kansas City, which is in the center of the state of Missouri, about 100 miles, you hit the Iowa border. Iowa was the first free state north of Missouri. 35 miles or so above the Iowa-Missouri border is a little bitty crossroads railroad town called Udell, Iowa.
Oh, wow.
And that was it's still on the map. There aren't more than a handful of people that live there, but it's still on the map. That was the first place that Arthur laid his head as a free man. He didn't stay there long before hopping a train to get over to Illinois, where he heard he could find work. He hopped that train. He made it to central Illinois, Kewanee, which is near the Galesburg, Peoria area. And that's where he wound up settling. When he did get married and he did have his firstborn child, he named that child Udell after that place he first laid his head as a free man. And ever since then, we have honored him by naming the firstborn in his direct lineage Udell, the firstborn son.
There you go. So if you're a Watts, you're going to be called Udell whether you like it or not.
if you're in my direct line, you are.
Your son actually is another Udell.
Yeah, he's Udell 5.
He's Udell 5 with the Roman numeral 5 with a V at the end. And, you know, when I first started dating my wife 30-some years ago, you know, and I finally told her this story because she was giving me a little bit of grief about the fact that my name was Udell, my father's name was Udell, and she'd met my grandfather. She's like, you know, if we ever get married, do I have to name my son Udell? And, I just kind of looked at her and I said, you don't have to do anything. Just understand that you won't get to go to Thanksgiving dinner with me.
Hard line there, Udell.
Now let's go back to the recipes. We talked a little bit about Stubbs just a little bit ago, and before we came on the air, I think. But what is it you think about old Arthur's formulas that make it so special?
Oh, that's easy. You know, one man's hand for a century. There is no product on the market in any category that I can think of in which one person had almost 100 years of active effort in refining a recipe, let alone a set of recipes that complement one another. You won't find it anywhere, and that's what you taste when you taste Old Arthur's. Understand that he was one of the earliest pit masters that America had, and he was local to the Kansas City area. And if you think about regional barbecue sauce styles, he was there when the Kansas City style was shaking itself out.
Yeah, okay. We lived there, so we know about that. We know about the barbecue tradition there.
Yeah, you probably know Arthur Bryant, right?
Arthur Bryant.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I've been there many times myself.
Yeah, burnt bits. I love the burnt bits. Burnt ends.
Burnt ends, yeah.
They say they never cleaned the hearth, ever.
Yeah.
No, it adds character to every bite. I understand.
Yeah, we loved it. I know. So you have the barbecue sauce. And when did you start expanding your product line? You now have the original, then you have a rich and tangy, and you for meats, poultry, and fish, you have a hot and spicy, bold and tasty with extra kick. You have dry rubs, a whole bunch of those. So when did that all start developing?
You know, we had the barbecue sauce, the original and the hot and spicy, so two barbecue sauces. We had them out for a couple of years. And then just decided to bring out a couple of additional flavors that we had of Arthur. You know, we've got many, many more, but we're insistent that we've insisted with each other, my father and I and my brothers and sisters, that we take our time and be very deliberate. Every product that we put out it's got to pull its own weight before we expand further. You know, we've got more dry rubs, we've got marinades, we've got all kinds of things that Arthur used in his repertoire that we haven't even begun to introduce yet. But the sauces came out really about 8 or 9 years ago, 8.5 years ago, and then just 3 years ago we put out the dry rub line that you see that complements it.
Now, guess what's going on my chicken? I have a 5-pound chicken.
Oh, good.
And I'm gonna rub it some. I'm gonna rub it. In fact, I'm gonna rub it a lot.
Well, I hope you enjoy it. And you do have options there, so not just the poultry rub. You can use the Crossroads dry rub for a little bit different flavor. It's a really hearty seasoned salt with a dozen or more different herbs and spices in there. You could even use the Gold Dust, which is a really savory. Add a really savory, smoky taste to it.
I think
so you have options.
I think we only got a couple. I think we only got a couple.
Okay,
but we have a starting point, and we can just keep on going.
Absolutely.
Well, you really are going to have a good time, and it's a wonderful opportunity, the Fancy Food Show, for you to interact with everybody else, network, and have them all sample your product. It's going to be a life changer, I think, for your company.
Well, we're excited, and you know, we've been really quiet for several years. We've been very deliberate in the foundation that we've put in place, and you know, we're ready. We're ready to be introduced to the world.
Well, here's a piece of advice: take your most comfortable shoes.
You have no idea. I mean, you've never seen so many products in your whole entire life.
This is halfway from Rock Island to Chicago.
Yeah.
3 days, you still can't get through the whole show. You've got to pick and choose what you're going to look at.
We wish you the very best of good fortune. May many people sample and even more people buy your product. And it's been a delight.
Yeah, I'm so happy to have met you and your family and your products, Udell.
Well, thank you very much.
And it's a wonderful all American story. We don't get too many of them surrounding the the beginnings of your company and your family. So we're just delighted to know you're still going.
You know, it's you use the word story, and that's exactly how we look at it. This is a story that you have to taste to believe.
That's a great line. That's a good line. Bring that one out. That's good. Thank you so much, Udell.
Thank you.
Have fun.
Thank you for having us. Yeah, and
drop me an email. Part. Tell me how well you enjoyed the show.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. I'll let you know.
Great. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Have a great day.
You too. Bye-bye.
Quite a story, sweetheart, yes?
Oh, yeah.
Quite a story indeed. And it's I'm sure it's going to be, have many more chapters, and we'll get a few more Udells on the program in due course. And don't go away, because we'll be taking a short break, and then we'll be back with you again.
Podcasting services for On the Menu Radio are provided by ASP Station, www.aspstation.net.
Welcome back. We're going to be talking to Charlie McKenna. And his company is called Lily's Q, which is, you know, Q. More Q. Yeah. Getting Q for
yeah,
Q.
So unlike the previous story, which is all about the guys, this one's all about Grandma, and Grandma is still being honored by all the members of her family, including Charlie.
We're talking to Charlie McKenna, who has a wonderful product line, restaurant, backstory. Product is, the restaurant's name is Lily's Q. Charlie, tell us where that name comes from.
Yeah, so Lily is actually my grandmother. And when I was growing up in South Carolina, she was the one that had me in the kitchen at an early age doing biscuits and gravy and country ham and really, you know, get my interest in cooking, along with my dad's name is Keto. It starts with a Q. So that's kind of where the Q comes from, but the Q also stands for barbecue as well. So,
oh, great. Yeah.
So that's kind of a family interest.
So it's Q all over the place, huh?
Now,
yes.
Was your father named after the Ecuadorian capital?
He uses that as a joke for people to be able to spell it. It started... Actually, because my dad, when he was young, his father was in textiles, and he was down in Mexico for a while. And they called my dad Keto for little one, or my grandfather Mac. And then it just stuck, so he basically uses that as his name now.
Uh-huh. Now, where in South Carolina was your grandmother?
Greenville, South Carolina.
That's what I thought I read. Greenville.
Yeah.
We our kids lived for a while in Greenwood, South Carolina, but we used to cover the Greenville food wine festival.
It's called Euphoria, right?
Euphoria.
Yeah.
Yeah. It was wonderful.
Yeah. It's a great city. It's really growing. The last, 5 to 10 years, the downtown area is beautiful.
Oh, it's beautiful. Yeah. It shows what you can do if you have any thoughtful city planning, right?
Exactly. Right. Yeah. You don't have to necessarily live in a big city. You can have, some big city life with a smaller city atmosphere.
Now, let's go back to this. So you have deep roots in your family in the barbecue department,
yeah.
Right?
Go
ahead. Tell us your story.
What happened was, growing up in the South, I think everyone sort of has a barbecue history or family lifestyle, whether that be you eat it once a week at your favorite barbecue place or you're into doing it yourself. I think it's something ingrained in a lot of Southerners, of a cuisine that we feel, started in the South, and something that we can really grow. And my background used to be all fine dining. I went to the Culinary Institute of America in New York.
You're kidding.
And I worked for great chefs in, Manhattan and Miami and then Chicago. But me and my dad started barbecue together as kind of a way to you know, we're very close, so we would use it, those competitions, for us to get back together on certain weekends.
Oh, nice.
And hang out. And then from there, it kind of just turned into a business. We opened a couple restaurants, and then the products came out of those restaurants. And it, you know, sort of took on a life of its own. But something I think is ingrained kind of in every Southerner is some type of barbecue history.
That and the, yeah, and a pimento cheese.
yeah, definitely pimento cheese.
Now, what's this Memphis thing? You won Memphis twice. For those of you who are ignorant to the world of barbecue, what does winning Memphis mean?
So every year in May, the city of Memphis has a festival all month long. And one of the weeks is actually Barbecue Week or Barbecue Festival. And it's considered the world championships of barbecue, especially for pork, because all categories are pork. I mean, it's whole hog category, whole shoulder category, and then pork ribs, baby back category. So we've won those, that contest twice, 2007 and 2016. So we have two considered world championships of barbecue and pulled pork.
Now, isn't there a similar contest in the place where Jack Daniel's is made?
So there's kind of two other main contests. One is the Jack Daniel's contest, which is an invite-only contest.
Right.
And then there's one in the Kansas City, which is more a categories of obviously pulled pork, but you have ribs, and then you also have chicken, and you also have brisket in that contest.
No, there was a chef, restaurateur from Boston, who had as his claim when he was on the show that he had actually won the Jack Daniel's contest.
You know him.
Yeah, was it Andy Husband?
I think it was.
I know Andy. He's a great guy. Yeah, wonderful barbecue chef.
Nice books, yeah. So your product line is, you do, who do you sell to? Let's do that one first.
Yeah, I mean, we, in the retail side of the business, we're international. Basically all 50 states, whether that be from small specialty grocery stores to the Whole Foods, Kroger's, Target's, Walmart, Fresh Markets of the world, down to the specialty stores that, you know, are in smaller towns that kind of have a specialty food area. And then internationally, we're very big in Australia, New Zealand, we're in Canada, you know, we're in Germany, France.
What do you sell in Australia and New Zealand?
So we have, our product line kind of ranges in three categories. We have, you know, six regional sauces. So the regional barbecue sauces that we created over, the different regions that I love barbecue from.
Yes.
We have a, like, rub line where we have three different dry rubs that go on the meats that we use here at the restaurant as well as in competition. And then we have a kettle cooked potato chip line, which has six different kind of Southern influenced flavors, from buttermilk and sweet onion to pimento cheese flavored kettle chip to hot pepper vinegar kettle chip, as well as a barbecue and a rib.
I used one of your rubs last night on the pork tenderloin.
Oh, which one?
Which one?
Key rub or Carolina dirt?
Carolina dirt, I think.
Yeah, Carolina dirt. So that's the that's our sugar based rub. That's the one that we use on a lot of pork. Obviously, sweetness goes well with pork because pork has a tendency to be naturally sweet a little bit. So that's the one that we used at Memphis and May to win the World Championships. That's the rub that we use on our pulled pork and our ribs in the restaurant every single day.
Okay.
That's sort of our main rub.
I see.
Now, what do you think?
I'm dying to use the brisket pepper, actually, to tell you the truth. I was trying to do it, and someone just sent us a multi-cooker with the sous vide function. And I thought to buy a brisket and do it with your rub and pepper and then do it sous vide.
Yeah, that rub came out of, it's basically we do a brisket here that's based off a Texas barbecue, so salt and pepper on it. And that's a special size pepper that we use here in the restaurant on our short ribs and our beef brisket. Mainly because we want that like punch, pepper and beef go really well together.
Uh-huh.
And we want that like that spicy, crunchy crust that you build on there.
Oh,
that pepper
great.
Helps us accomplish that.
And where was the Nashville was the one that we used to go to. We interviewed that guy who ran, I mean, it was like a whole big section of the music and food festival in Nashville.
Oh, yes, yes.
And he did chickens and what else? He did everything.
He did lambs, he did pigs.
Yeah, he did all that. Oh. Huge section. Yeah, it was the most popular thing in the festival, I think. So have you ever done that one? You'd enjoy that. But he's a big pit master. I don't remember his name. But
it's music.
From Nashville, I know two pit masters, Pat Martin and
Gary.
Pat
Martin.
He's been around a while. He does he's another one that does really good stuff. He does a lot of whole animal cookery, especially at those type of events as well.
That's what he did. I mean,
he does that at Music City Food and Wine Festival. You ought to go to that. It's a good time.
Yeah, I do some of them. I've done South Beach Food and Wine Festival. We've done Charleston Food and Wine Festival.
We've been
to a couple different other ones around the country.
We went to the South Beach one when it first started, the third year, and it was still so huge. I mean, I was totally lost to the whole thing.
They ran out.
Yeah, it's gigantic.
They ran out of champagne.
Yeah, they do.
Oh.
It was a feature event which was selling for like four or five times the ticket price because Al Roker was going to be there.
It was burgers and bubbles,
and they ran out of champagne. Why they didn't go just buy some at the hotel next door? I have no idea.
They were rioting because they were scalping tickets for this thing.
they ran out of champagne. Yeah. What kind of party is that? Huh?
Yeah, you can't run out of the booze at a party. That's for sure.
Well,
your party ends real early.
Yeah. So your kettle chips are big sellers.
Yes.
Huh? Yeah.
Yeah. So we came out with that. Our kettle chips. All the products came from like just things that we were using in the restaurant. And we used to have a small stand in the train station downtown. Mm-hmm. And instead of doing French fries, we like fried our own kettle chips at the restaurant, and we'd bring these like pre-made bags of our own kettle chips there where we put our own seasoning flavors on them, like pimento cheese and hot pepper vinegar. And then the volume count just became too much that we couldn't really, you know, cute it in a quality standard that we wanted to keep up. So we found a co-packer to actually co-pack our potato chips.
Uh-huh.
And then once we did that and had them in bags, then we started to take them along with us to the sales meetings that we had for sauce and meet with the chip buyers. And slowly, it started to grow, get some legs.
So now, do you have any regrets for leaving the fine dining scene?
You know, actually, when I first started, I think a lot of my friends were like, dude, what are you doing? Going to barbecue, right? Like I think a lot of people were, you know, barbecue's always been thought of like a cheaper or lowbrow food. And I think one of the things that we're finding out over the last 5 years is that to cook great barbecue, it takes a lot of time and passion.
Oh, it's huge, yes.
It takes a lot of expertise on how to control the fire.
Oh, yes.
And when I had some of my buddies come in here and like stage with me for the day, they'd be like, holy mackerel, I didn't think this much went into it.
Oh, yeah.
So I think they had a different respect afterwards of what we were trying to do and where we were trying to take our barbecue from, you know, just a roadside stand of being in a major city like Chicago and competing with all the other restaurants. You know, you have to have great product to stay around. And luckily, you know, we've been lucky enough to have the main, we call it the mothership in Bucktown, Chicago, that's been here. You know, we just passed our 9-year anniversary on July 29th.
That's
so
great. Congratulations.
In the restaurant world, that's like 100 years. So.
I know. Yeah.
Have you ever done the Big Apple Barbecue in New York City?
I have not.
That is a riot. You should do that one.
We've looked into that a couple times. It just didn't work out with our schedule. But there's a huge one in Chicago called Windy City Smokeout.
Yes.
Where it was in July. There was 20 teams up here, 3 from Chicago all, and then 17 from around the country. That, you know, that's the best thing about barbecue is that a lot of us know each other or friends with each other, and it's, you know, it's friendly competition. Obviously, we want to, you know, claim or produce the best meat we possibly can and say that ours is the best. But then we get around and, you know, talk to each other and pick each other's brains and see what's working and what's not working around the country at their different restaurants. And it's almost like a learning experience as well as a family reunion, sort of.
Yeah. Well, what's his name? Franklin in Austin certainly pushed in the into the high stakes arena, huh?
Yeah. Yep. I mean,
and of course, we We lived for a while in Kansas City. Okay. That was a different thing,
another,
too.
But that's another mecca of barbecue.
Yeah, but, you know, this fine dining chef friend of ours, he fell in love with Franklin's barbecue and said, you know, I could do that. And so he went and bought two of those big smokers. And, boy, I mean, he's going nuts with everything. I mean, you know how you adjust the heat and the smoke and the this and that and the other. We had an Asian pear tree, and we gave him, we have more Asian pears than we know what to do with. We gave him a whole.
Oh, I love Asian pears.
Yeah, well, we gave him a whole load of them because I had a dream where I envisioned a cocktail with these smoked pears, smoked Asian pears. And so he made it, and he named it for our show on the menu.
it sounds delicious.
It was great. It was really good.
I mean, that's the great thing I think you see about barbecue these days. It's like, obviously, it comes from this huge history and past before, but a lot of the chefs that, you know, want to get into live fire cooking are switching it up, right? You can't just come in and do exactly what Franklin's doing because he's already doing it. So how can you create something that uses live fire and smoke flavor and then, you know, bring in Asian pears or bring in, you know, Thai Vietnamese flavor profiles? Because every country in the world has some type of live fire cooking,
exactly.
Right?
Yeah.
So how do you bring in all those flavor profiles and start doing barbecue in a different way, but still, you know, hold strong to the traditions just like the French chefs used to do with the French, you know, original food?
Yeah, I like that Argentinian guy. What's his name?
Oh, Francis Mallmann?
Yes.
Yeah.
Talk about it.
Yeah, that guy's a legend, man. You know, some of the contraptions that he cooks on are pretty outstanding, right?
Like, oh, yeah. So
different, like, rebar put together hanging over an open fire. I mean, I wish we could do more of that stuff in the city of Chicago, but they have a problem with fires here, considering the great Chicago fire.
Right.
That's a good idea.
I guess Mrs. O'Leary's cow left a mark that would never be erased.
Oh, man. I mean, even to this day, when you're opening a live fire restaurant or a barbecue restaurant, they are in here making sure that all the things are lined up because they're more worried about your building going up and then the whole block going up, right? Which is a lot of reason why Chicago has all that old brick now, because everything was built out of brick after that.
Uh-huh.
To try and curtail like a whole fire to bring it down.
Well, there was a great fire of London, too, in the 1660s.
Yeah.
And there's a statue kind of hanging on a street corner. And
right. It's
the something or other of Pudding Corner. And it's in honor of the person who created the fire by kicking something over.
Yeah.
A little bit like Mr.
I usually start by something easy.
It's fascinating talking to you, Charlie McKenna.
Sure.
And anybody who wants to order your products can go on your website, which is
if you go to liliesq.com, then you can get to the store where you can buy all the products.
Okay, I'm reading off a piece of paper. I'll get that edited out. So it's www.liliesq.com.
liliesq.com.
Right, got it. And you can order right off of your website?
Yes, we ship directly from our website as well.
Got it.
And
I have to get on there and get my pulled pork. You use Duroc pigs only.
Yes. I mean, being from my chef background, I try to use the best meat I can possibly get to do all the products, whether that be prime brisket from Idaho or whether it's, Duroc porks from Minneapolis or near Minneapolis, Minnesota, some near Illinois, trying to run the best meat products we possibly can.
But it's a smoky business, I can tell.
Oh yeah, real smoky.
Makes you cough.
Well, it does sometimes.
Well, it's the product learns delightful. The history of it all, and talking to you is a wonderful experience. Continued success, Charlie McKenna of Lily's.
Oh, thank you so much. It was great talking to you as well.
Podcasting services for On the Menu Radio are provided by ASP Station, www.aspstation.net.
Well, next up, you know, this is a great program for names. Next we have Chitra Agrawal talking about her business, her company called Brooklyn Deli, and Deli is spelt D-E-L-H-I, so you could got a guess at what kind of products she has, and it's a wonderful line of products. Listen to Chitra. Chitra Agrawal, I've been practicing that and I still didn't get it right, but I knew that I was in love with your company long before I realized we were going to be interviewing. It's Brooklyn Deli, spelled D-E-H-L-I, which I thought was brilliant.
Oh, D-E-L-H-I, yeah.
And yeah, and so anyhow, of course, it's a reference to Delhi, or New Delhi, in India, and your background, you were American born, but your traditional family recipes are Indian because that's your ethnicity. And you said you started out about 10 years ago with a blog. Is that how you started this?
Yeah, I was working a job in marketing, and I had always been interested in collecting recipes from my family. And one day I just decided that instead of kind of keeping them all in my email and things like that, that I would start a blog where I would document these recipes. And what ended up happening is that I started to learn the recipes from my family members, and then I began making the recipes kind of my own by using local produce that was in my farm share that I was receiving every week, and then also just kind of infusing a lot of the different cuisines that I grew up eating. I grew up in Jersey, so a lot of Italian food, and then I lived in California for a while, so Mexican and Asian flavors. And then, I mean, living in New York City, it's like there's just so much here. So, you know, taking those kind of traditional Indian recipes as a starting point really was kind of how the voice of the blog grew.
Now, here's an interesting question. I never thought to ask it before, but everybody knows that Delhi is the capital of India, and if they're really clever, they know that it's called New Delhi. Now, the question is, why is it called New Delhi, and is there such a thing as an Old Delhi?
There is, actually. There are parts of the city that are referred to as Old Delhi and then also New Delhi.
Okay,
and,
all right.
Yeah. So my father's actually, a lot of his family is in Delhi. So that's kind of like where the Delhi, in Brooklyn Delhi, came from, too.
And it's a very dangerous place to drive, I understand.
Yeah. There's a lot of different types of vehicles and animals, bikes on the street. So.
And I guess, am I right that you don't actually have to have a driver's license?
I don't know. I feel like
I heard that, too. That's wild. Well, you know, your lineup of products, the first one that caught my eye, because it was, it must have been a year and a half or 2 years ago, it was in one of the food magazines as the hot, the not hot spicy, but the hot new ingredient was this achar. And what exactly is achar, spelled A-C-H-A-A-R?
Yeah, so achar, it translates into pickled in Hindi, and it is a spicy condiment that is eaten all over India. And achar is just the name for it in Hindi, but you'll find it referred to as sometimes Indian pickle, by different names depending on the region, and it's, you know, a way to preserve a lot of times vegetables or fruits, but I've also seen achars that are made from fish and different meats, and it's just it's something I grew up eating and I have been obsessed with since I was really young. It has a super intense flavor. You add just a little bit usually to whatever you're eating to kind of add this kind of like very intense, spicy, sour, a lot of different flavors all at once. And, you know, when I was developing my recipes, I really wanted it to be something that you could kind of use more sparingly. So I reduced the salt content in my achars.
That's why it's so easy. Yeah,
totally. So it's not like... There's definitely Indian pickles you can find in the Indian store where people are like, oh man, like it's so intense. Like you can only have like a tiny bit. And I love those intense flavors as well, but I wanted to infuse the flavor of an achar into kind of like my own condiment. And that's kind of where the recipes kind of started to develop.
Well, I spoon it out of a jar and spread it on rye crackers. Yeah. And it's really good. It's almost as good as the legendary carrot pickle.
Oh, we had a carrot pickle. I mean, hot and spicy that we got at the Indian deli town, and it lasts. We think it probably was 20 years old.
Yeah, I mean, I'm sure it's still good too, and the flavor develops over time.
Oh yes,
also, yeah. I didn't think it spoiled. In fact, the only reason it's not still with us is that it got kind of warmed up because our refrigerator broke.
We got a new refrigerator, and it was a catastrophe.
In the days between the old refrigerator and the new one.
The
carrot pickle was exposed to the atmosphere perhaps a little bit more than it should have been, so we decided we ought to throw it out.
It should have paid us rent. It lived in our house for so long.
It was a big jar, and it was $4.99.
Oh, my God.
It lived on.
Now, your tomato achar probably costs a little bit more than that.
Yeah.
Definitely.
Well, you now have we got this little chart, which I thought was very interesting, which you specify the different ingredients, condiments, I should say, and you give suggestions for what to use them for and talk about them so that people would not be nervous about or unsure about how to consume them, which is very helpful.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I think that was part of when we launched Achar, we knew that we would have to do a lot of education around it because it's really, there's no other achars in the Western markets.
Right.
And even when you go to the Indian store, sometimes it's just called Indian pickle. So we're kind of like in a little bit of our own world.
No, I looked it up immediately to see what it was. So that's all I knew.
Now, the other sample you sent is interesting. And actually several more, but Tikki something masala.
Oh, no, that's a new line that sort of I was like going to get to in a minute.
Oh, okay. That's sort of like the universal flavor of Indian cooking in England, where I come from.
Yeah, totally.
Yeah, well, that's a different line. We were just going through the condiments. We have the achars, and we have curry ketchup and curry mustard. And as I told you, my daughter and I were fighting. My daughter-in-law and I were fighting over the curry mustard. And so, I mean, I want to emphasize at this point two things about your product line. Is first of all the ingredients are really high quality ingredients, and the flavors are all balanced. And they're very accessible. And you, of course, being a self-taught chef, you know how to make them versatile. I mean, they're a combination of your traditions and your American experience, but they're extremely versatile, more versatile than anything that you'd buy in a traditional Indian store.
Yeah, I mean, like, a lot of the, a lot of the products that we put out really start in our home kitchen. So I mean, we use an achar every day that we make. And the curry ketchup, that was something that we actually used to make by just taking ketchup and mixing it with the tomato achar.
Uh-huh.
And we were like, well, why don't we just put this out? It's something that we use. And we just have a homemade ketchup recipe that is infused with the flavor of the tomato achar. So that's kind of how the curry ketchup came to be, really. And the curry mustard is kind of like a funny thing because I love mustards, and I really wanted to develop a mustard for us because I just felt like, you know, we're Brooklyn Deli. Like,
you have to have mustard. But is mustard found in Indian cooking traditionally?
Well, it's funny because I was
I think we lost.
They eat a lot of fish, and but they also use a lot of mustard product and mustard oil. And there is a mustard kind of fish dish that is made using, it's a very intense kind of mustard flavor. And so it is actually something that is used in India, but, you know, not like in the sense of like putting on a sandwich or something like that. But yeah, I mean, I worked hard at that recipe because mustard also, it changes over time. So I had maybe like 20 or it was a crazy amount of samples going in our kitchen when I was developing that recipe because I needed to see how the flavors basically would meld and end up, you know, like a week or 2 weeks down the line. And so that was a pretty intense process.
Uh-huh. And did you start from the seeds? Because
we start from whole seeds and mustard powder, and we brine our seeds, and then we grind them fresh with my own blend of spices and tamarind, brown sugar. And so that definitely, it took time to develop, but our motivation was that we were launching this curry ketchup at Whole Foods, and the buyer there was very interested to see a curry mustard from us. So I was like, you know what, if we have an opportunity like this, like, let's go for it. Because I definitely wanted to launch one, but just kind of put the fire under us to get it going.
Now, the reason I asked is we had a guest on the program some time ago, and she was making mustard seed oil.
Oh.
And I think it was some wacky place like Australia.
Yeah. I love mustard seed oil.
Oh, okay. So you're familiar with that representation of it as well.
Yeah. In some dishes, like my family from North India, they use mustard oil for certain dishes. It goes wonderfully with potatoes. It's a very unique flavor. Also, it's used in some achars in North India. So my relatives there will make like a carrot pickle. And they will, the oil they use will be mustard oil.
And they sell it for $4.99
you'll find it for cheaper in the marketplace if you do the
for a lifetime, a lifetime supply, huh?
It's funny because that you mentioned that because my my great aunt loves our achars, and she takes them to the marketplace and is like, to the vendor, like, you should sell these. I'm like, it's too expensive.
Oh, now, the latest thing you're doing, though, is your simmer sauces. These are new. And we have tikka masala, we have the coconut curry, and then we have the tomato curry.
Yeah.
And go ahead, tell us about
those. Yeah, these are all new and also inspired by recipes that I'd make at home. And so now, you know, we started on this like spicy trip, right, with our achars, but after having a kid, so now I have a toddler at home that I'm feeding. So what we do is I make my sauces and curries mild so that, you know, I'll add a protein, veggie, serve it with rice and some yogurt to him. But then my husband and I, we want the heat. So we put the achars on top. So So basically, this is another way to kind of like, for other families that are looking for a solution where it's like, you don't want to make a million different things. You know, you want to make one meal and be able to kind of modify it for everybody's taste. So that's kind of how these simmer sauces came to be. I think that golden coconut curry, I mean, I had been making that for a long time. And then the tikka masala is kind of my play on it. It's vegan. Usually it's made with butter and dairy, but we make it with like an organic coconut cream. And then Dad's tomato curry is really based off of a curry that my father would make us when we were growing up.
Oh, so that's why it's called Dad's.
Yeah. Because sometimes people are like, oh, is that Ben, my husband? But I'm like, no, it's my dad.
Well, now, tell our listeners where they can acquire these products.
Yeah, so, I mean, this last month, we actually launched these simmer sauces. So those are available at Whole Foods, and our achars, our garlic and our tomato, also launched at Whole Foods. And those are in the global flavors aisle, and then our curry ketchup and our curry mustard, those can be found in the condiments aisle.
I see. And people could go on your website and order from there. And why don't you give us your website?
Oh, yeah. So the website is brooklyndeli.com, and deli is spelled D-E-L-H-I. And we're also available on Amazon, too.
Everything's on Amazon.
Yeah.
So, well, I mean, I think you must feel very proud of yourself having done this. I mean, it's a major accomplishment. And, I mean, it's become, this interest in Indian food has become so widespread lately. I mean, the number of cookbooks we get is enormous. And our grandchildren, well, especially our granddaughter, has two really close friends that are both Indian. I mean, born in India, but living in the States. And so she's 12, and she has a taste for Indian cooking. It's really spreading. I mean, you know, as you pointed out, you modify the heat for your toddlers, but but basically they're devouring it right and left. So
yeah, I mean, the idea is that people will have the achar with the meal, which is really how I grew up eating food at home as well, which is like you have a little rice, you have some a sauce that is flavoring either lentils or veggies, and then you layer it on with some yogurt and some achar. That's kind of like my comfort food and what we really, we made quite a bit at home.
And naan, I mean, my granddaughter loves naan.
Oh, yeah.
That I can't make, so.
Okay, well, Chicha, thank you so much for joining us today. It's an interesting story. And I'm sure you'll have more products that you'll want to tell our listeners about in the future. So don't worry about the fact don't worry about the fact that you won't be welcome back.
You will be welcome back. So, and I'm glad you giggle. I giggle too.
It's a pleasure to talk with both of you. Thank you so much for having me.
And we promised you something sweet to close out the program. What's it called?
Yeah, this is a great program for names. It's called Run Amok Maple, and we loved it.
And guess what kind of trees it comes from?
And we're talking to Laura Sorkin. Chitra Agrawal, I've been practicing that, and I still didn't get it right, but I knew that I was in love with your company long before I realized we were going to be interviewing. It's Brooklyn Deli, spelled D-E-H-L-I, which I thought was brilliant.
Oh, D-E-L-H-I, yeah.
And so anyhow, of course, it's a reference to Delhi, or New Delhi, in India, and your background, you were American born, but your traditional family recipes are Indian, because that's your ethnicity. And you said you started out about 10 years ago with a blog. Is that how you started this?
Yeah, I was working a job in marketing, and I had always been interested in collecting recipes from my family. And one day I just decided that instead of kind of keeping them all in my email and things like that, that I would start a blog where I would document these recipes. And what ended up happening is that I started to learn the recipes from my family members, and then I began making the recipes kind of my own by using local produce that was in my farm share that I was receiving every week, and then also just kind of infusing a lot of the different cuisines that I grew up eating. I grew up in Jersey, so a lot of Italian food, and then I lived in California for a while, so Mexican and Asian flavors. And then, I mean, living in New York City, it's like there's just right. so much here. So, you know, taking those kind of traditional Indian recipes as a starting point really was kind of how the voice of the blog grew.
Now, here's an interesting question. I never thought to ask it before, but everybody knows that Delhi is the capital of India, and if they're really clever, they know that it's called New Delhi. Now, the question is, why is it called New Delhi, and is there such a thing as an Old Delhi?
There is, actually. There are parts of the city that are referred to as Old Delhi and then also New Delhi.
Okay,
and,
all right.
Yeah. So my father's actually, a lot of his family is in Delhi. So that's kind of like where the Delhi, in Brooklyn Delhi, came from, too.
And it's a very dangerous place to drive, I understand.
There's a lot of different types of vehicles and animals, bikes on the street. So,
and I guess, am I right that you don't actually have to have a driver's license?
I don't know. I feel like
I heard that too. That's wild. Well, you know, your lineup of products, the first one that caught my eye, because it was, it must have been a year and a half or 2 years ago, it was in one of the food magazines as the hot new ingredient was this achar. And what exactly is achar, spelled A-C-H-A-A-R?
Yeah, so achar, it translates into pickled in Hindi, and it is a spicy condiment that is eaten all over India. And achar is just the name for it in Hindi, but you'll find it referred to as sometimes Indian pickle, by different names depending on the region. And it's, you know, a way to preserve a lot of times vegetables or fruits. But I've also seen achars that are made from fish and different meats. And it's just it's something I grew up eating and I have been obsessed with since I was really young. It has a super intense flavor. You add just a little bit usually to whatever you're eating. To kind of add this kind of like very intense, spicy, sour, a lot of different flavors all at once. And, you know, when I was developing my recipes, I really wanted it to be something that you could kind of use more sparingly. So I reduced the salt content in my achars.
That's why it's so easy. Yeah,
totally. So it's not like... There's definitely Indian pickles you can find in the Indian store where people are like, oh, man, like, it's so intense. Like, you can only have, like, a tiny bit. And I love those intense flavors as well, but I wanted to infuse the flavor of an achar into kind of, like, my own condiment. And that's kind of where the recipes kind of started to develop.
Well, I spoon it out. I spoon it out of a jar and spread it on rye crackers. Yeah. And it's really good. It's almost as good as the legendary carrot pickle.
Peter, we had a carrot pickle, I mean hot and spicy, that we got at the Indian Deli in town. And it lasts, we think it probably was 20 years old.
I'm sure it's still good too, and the flavor develops over time.
Oh yes,
I didn't think it spoiled. In fact, the only reason it's not still with us is that it got kind of warmed up because our refrigerator broke.
Well, yeah, we got a new refrigerator, and it was a catastrophe.
In the days between the old refrigerator and the new one.
The
carrot pickle was exposed to the atmosphere, perhaps a little bit more than it should have been, so we decided we ought to throw it out.
It should have paid us rent. It lived in our house for so long.
It was a big jar, and it was $4.99.
Oh, my God.
It lived on.
Your tomato achar probably costs a little bit more than that.
Yeah.
Definitely.
Well, you now have we got this little chart, which I thought was very interesting, which you specify the different ingredients, condiments, I should say, and you give suggestions for what to use them for and talk about them so that people would not be nervous about or unsure about how to consume them, which is very helpful.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I think that was part of when we launched Char, we knew that we would have to do a lot of education around it because it's really, there's no other achars in the Western markets.
Right.
And even when you go to the Indian store, sometimes it's just called Indian pickle. So we're kind of like in a little bit of our own world.
No, I looked it up immediately to see what it was. So that's all I knew.
Now, the other sample you sent is interesting, and actually several more, but Tikki something masala.
Oh, now that's a new line that I was going to get to in a minute.
Oh, okay. That's sort of like the universal flavor of Indian cooking in England, where I come from.
Yeah, totally.
Yeah, well, that's a different line. We were just going through the condiments. We have the achars, and we have curry ketchup and curry mustard. And as I told you, my daughter and I were fighting. My daughter-in-law and I were fighting over the curry mustard. And so, I mean, I want to emphasize at this point two things about your product line. Is first of all the ingredients are really high-quality ingredients, and the flavors are all balanced. And they're very accessible. And you, of course, being a self-taught chef, you know how to make them versatile. I mean, they're a combination of your traditions and your American experience, but they're extremely versatile, more versatile than anything that you'd buy in a traditional Indian store.
Yeah, I mean, like, a lot of the, a lot of the products that we put out really start in our home kitchen. So, I mean, we use an achar every day that we make, and the curry ketchup, that was something that we actually used to make by just taking ketchup and mixing it with the tomato achar.
Uh-huh.
And we were like, well, why don't we just put this out? It's something that we use, and we just have a homemade ketchup recipe that is infused with the flavor of the tomato achar. So that's kind of how the curry ketchup came to be, really. And the curry mustard is kind of like a funny thing because I love mustards, and I really wanted to develop a mustard for us because I just felt like, you know, we're Brooklyn Deli. Like,
you have to have mustard. But is mustard found in Indian cooking traditionally?
Well, it's funny because I was...
I think we lost.
Okay, you're back.
They eat a lot of fish, and But they also use a lot of mustard product and mustard oil. And there is a mustard kind of fish dish that is made using, it's a very intense kind of mustard flavor. And so it is actually something that is used in India, but, you know, not like in the sense of like putting out a sandwich or something like that. But yeah, I mean, I worked hard at that recipe because mustard also, it changes over time. So I had maybe like 20 or it was a crazy amount of samples going, in our, kitchen when I was developing that recipe, because I needed to see how the flavors basically, would meld and end up, you know, like a week or 2 weeks down the line. And so that was a pretty intense process.
Now, did you start from the seeds? Because
we start from whole seeds, and mustard powder, and we brine our seeds, and then we grind them fresh with my own blend of spices and tamarind, brown sugar, and so that definitely it took time to develop. But our motivation was that we were launching this curry ketchup at Whole Foods, and the buyer there was very interested to see a curry mustard from us. So I was like, you know what, if we have an opportunity like this, like, let's go for it. Because I definitely wanted to launch one, but just kind of put the fire under us to get it going.
Now, the reason I asked is we had a guest on the program some time ago, and she was making mustard seed oil. And I think it was some wacky place like Australia.
Yeah. I love mustard seed oil.
Oh, okay. So you're familiar with that representation of it as well.
Yeah. In some dishes, like my family from North India, they use mustard oil for certain dishes. It goes wonderfully with potatoes. It's a very unique flavor. Also, it's used in some achars in North India. So my relatives there will make like a carrot pickle. And they will, the oil they use will be mustard oil.
And they sell it for $4.99 in
Well, you'll find it for cheaper in the marketplace if you do
a lifetime supply, huh?
It's funny because that you mentioned that because my, my great aunt loves our achars and she takes them to the marketplace and is like, to the vendor, like, you should sell these. I'm like, it's too expensive.
Now, the latest thing you're doing, though, is your simmer sauces. These are new. And we have tikka masala, we have the coconut curry, and then we have the tomato curry.
Yeah.
And go ahead, tell us about those.
Yeah, these are all new and also inspired by recipes that I'd make at home. And so now, you know, we started on this like spicy trip, right, with our achars, but after having a kid, so now I have a toddler at home that I'm feeding. So what we do is I make my sauces and curries mild so that, you know, I'll add a protein, veggie, serve it with rice and some yogurt to him. But then my husband and I, we want the heat. So we put the achars on top. So basically, this is another way to kind of like for other families that are looking for a solution where it's like you don't want to make a million different things. You know, you want to make one meal and be able to kind of modify it for everybody's taste. So that's kind of how these simmer sauces came to be. I think that golden coconut curry, I mean, I have been making that for a long time, and then the tikka masala is kind of my play on it. It's vegan. Usually it's made with butter and dairy, but we make it with, like, an organic coconut cream. And then Dad's tomato curry is really based off of a curry that my father would make us when we were growing up.
Oh, so that's why it's called Dad's.
Yeah. Because sometimes people are like, oh, is that – Ben, my husband, but I'm like, no, it's my dad.
Well, now, tell our listeners where they can acquire these products.
Yeah. So, I mean, this last month we actually launched these simmer sauces. So those are available at Whole Foods, and our achars, our garlic and our tomato, also launched at Whole Foods. And those are in the global flavors aisle. And then our curry ketchup and our curry mustard, those can be found in the condiments aisle.
I see. And people could go on your website and order from there. And why don't you give us your website?
Oh, yeah. So the website is brooklyndeli.com, and deli is spelled D-E-L-H-I. And we're also available on Amazon, too.
Everything's on Amazon.
Yeah.
So, well, I mean, I think you must feel very proud of yourself having done this. I mean, it's a major accomplishment. And, I mean, it's become, this interest in Indian food has become so widespread lately. I mean, the number of cookbooks we get is enormous, and the way, and our grandchildren, well, especially our granddaughter, has two really close friends that are both Indian. I mean, born in India but living in the States, and so she's 12, and she has a taste for Indian cooking, so it's really spreading. I mean, you know, as you pointed out, you modified the heat for your toddlers, but but basically they're devouring it right and left. So
yeah, I mean, the idea is that people will have the achar with the meal, which is really how I grew up eating food at home as well. Which is like you have a little rice, you have some a sauce that is flavoring either lentils or veggies, and then you layer it on with some yogurt and some achar. That's kind of like my comfort food, and what we really we made quite a bit at home.
And naan, I mean, my granddaughter loves naan.
Oh yeah,
that I can't make. So
okay, well, Chicha, thank you so much for joining us today. It's an interesting story. And I'm sure you'll have more products that you'll want to tell our listeners about in the future. So don't worry about the fact. Don't worry about the fact that you won't be welcome back.
You will be welcome back. You say. So, and I'm glad you giggle. I giggle too.
It's a pleasure to talk with both of you. Thank you so much for having me.
Boy, sweetheart, that was a grueling program.
I thought it was delightful. But such a good lineup of products at the Specialty Food Association, and all these artisanal producers are certainly alive and well in the U.S.
And it all tastes so good. We're so lucky to have access to it. And of course, we're tasting only on your behalf.
Yes. But the people are delightful. That's the greatest thing about this. And what we do is meeting these wonderful people.
And we hope you wonderful people will join us same time, same place next week. And until then,
bye-bye.